Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome in. It's episode 66 of the Canucks Speakeasy Podcast, the Mario Lemieux episode. I'm Pete.
And I'm Doug.
What could also say the Gino Ojic episode, eh, Doug? He did wear that once.
Gino did wear that once. That's correct, actually. And obviously, Josh Hosang got in a little bit of, I don't want to say trouble, but, you know, the old hockey men were yelling at him for wearing number 66, which, again, is ridiculous. But Mario Lemieux, true story, one of my all-time favorite players growing up.
And let's get into the game flight here.
Let's do it. The Canucks finished off a mini two-game set against the Edmonton Oilers with a 3-0 loss. The Canucks didn't look good in this game whatsoever. Bright spot if you're an Oilers fan, Jesse Puljujarvi already has 6 goals on the season, scored a 6 against the Canucks in that game.
Canucks come back and play one of their better games of the year against the Jets, a 4-0 win, Demko with his first regular season shutout, goals by Schmidt, Miller, Hoggy, and Petey, you like to see that, and Brandon Sutter does the amazing and gets an assist.
You would think the Canucks would be able to carry that momentum in the back-to-back series against the Jets, but alas, they lost 5-2. The Jets badly outplayed the Canucks. Braden Holtby didn't look sharp. Bright spots for the Canucks. Elias Pettersson gets his 10th goal of the year. JT Miller got his 6th goal of the year.
So a 3-game week, a win, 2 losses. I got the win again this week, so that was nice. An easier one for me to talk about. It was tough last week, but 3 games, 1-2, and here we are again in kind of a familiar spot the last couple of weeks as Canucks fans.
Yeah, it's weird. The Canucks just can't seem to get on a bit of a roll and a bit of a win streak. They have one strong performance, like the 3-0 win against the Jets, and then they follow that up with a 5-2 loss the next night. It's just very disappointing.
4-0 against the Jets. It was even 4. Petey got the late goal there.
Oh, yeah. I forgot he got the empty netter. 4-0. You're right. I don't know what it is. The Canucks just, they're probably one of the most inconsistent teams this year. Sometimes, some nights they look really good. Other nights they haven't looked good. I know the goaltending hasn't been great. I think we'll probably get into this a little bit later in the episode, Pete, but, you know, I definitely think it's time for Green to ride Demko. Even a back-to-back like last night, I think Demko should have played.
Yeah, I kind of do too. I mean, I understand the whole back-to-back on the road thing, but I mean, you've had a bunch of days off before, young goalie, playing great. Holtby didn't look fantastic last night. You're right. I would have liked to see Demko. I understand. I'm not going to completely throw Green under the bus for this, but it's definitely a tough one to go in there when you see what Holtby did and what Demko did the night before. Canucks, if you take out the 3 wins against Ottawa, they're 6-15-2. They're currently 6th in the division. That's 3 points up on Ottawa. They're 2 behind Calgary, but Calgary still got 3 in hand, and 5 behind Montreal, who they have coming up shortly as well.
Yeah, the Canucks also have a 2-game set against the Leafs, so their opponents are just going to get tougher these next set of games here. Hopefully, they can go on a bit of a run, but it's looking more and more likely the Canucks are not going to make the playoffs this year and will probably be sellers at the deadline.
I think I saw a stat that they have a 6% shot, roughly, of making the playoffs. I assume that's probably dropped a little bit since I saw that. And there's a more than 70% chance that they finish in 6th. And looking at things the way they are still right now, I'd say that looks about right.
Yeah, it's been a tough season so far for the Canucks. Obviously, we'll break it down in a little bit more in depth a little bit later in this episode. It's hard to really pin what has been the Canucks' biggest struggles. I guess inconsistency would be one of them. But, you know, at times the second line looks good. At times the lotto line looks good. At times goaltending doesn't look like the problem. It's just, for whatever reason, this team just can't get on a bit of a run. They just, yeah, they're in a real funk right now.
Well, there's a lot of things to it. I think there are elements of bad luck. There's a lot of goalposts. There's definitely been games where the goaltending hasn't made the big save, and that's important. I mean, we got used to that with Markstrom and making the big save. I thought Demko, of course, did that in the win. Holtby didn't do that last night. And for me, I'd like to see more out of the second line this year. I don't think the second line has done enough on a regular basis. And then you get into the bottom six, there's just not enough there, not compared to a lot of the other teams in their division. They just don't have enough scoring depth. But I will give them some credit that they have started playing better. I think that first stretch of games, that early bit of the schedule, just absolutely killed them.
Yeah, I agree. It was, I think they had played 10 games in like 16 nights or something like that to start off the year, which obviously is tough for any team to try to deal with. I agree that they have started to play better. Like, I think Schmidt has really started to play better. And I think it was Jeff Patterson put up the thing saying, hey, we're at the halfway mark of the season for games played for the Canucks. Who's your MVP? Who's the most exciting player? Who's your unsung hero? Who's the best defenseman? And most people that answered that question had Nate Schmidt as the best defenseman. And I think probably the first 10 or 12 games into the season, most Canuck fans wouldn't be saying that.
I did put Hughes in for that for best defenseman just because it's Hughes, and I thought he looked really good last night. You're right about Schmidt, though. He has looked good. I even had to give some consideration briefly to Tyler Myers there before I remembered all the penalties he's taken, because he's just being one extreme or the other. But realistically, it was Hughes or Schmidt. I'm not going to kid anyone. I put Jordy Benn as my unsung hero for there. I put most exciting is Hoglander, and MVP is Besser.
Yeah, I agree with Besser as the MVP. I've been swayed to Schmidt, as he's probably been our most consistent defenseman offensively and defensively. Most exciting, of course, has got to be Nils Hoglander. Unsung hero, I mean, it's kind of a tough one. I would honestly say Zach MacEwen, at least for the limited games he's got, he's looked really, really good. And again, I'm sure we'll unpack this in a little bit more depth later, but you know, the fact that MacEwen hasn't been given a solid role in the lineup night in, night out is concerning to me. And I hope Green realizes that, you know, MacEwen should be an everyday NHLer at this point, at least on this roster.
Yep, I want him into one goal in 15 games. Not a lot of ice time, though. I'm not quite sure he gets into my unsung, but I do like Zach MacEwen a lot. Otherwise, Doug, how's things going? We will unpack the Canucks. We got a few things coming up here. We got around the room where we're going to dive into some NHL issues and topics around the league, not pertaining to the Canucks directly. We'll be doing the Chirpin segment where we talk about some tweets from the Canucks universe, and then we're going to dive into all sorts of stuff. But before we do that, Doug, what's going on in your world?
Not much. I'm on a bit of a staycation. I've taken this week off, which is nice. Just needed, you know, some time away from work and to clear my head, just like I'm sure everybody does at the moment. And yeah, it was just one of those things. Work has been really tough lately, and it's just not being in the building is important to me and important to my mental health, which is great. So yeah, I'm getting to spend this week off with my fiance. Her and I just have some time off this week, which is awesome. I also escaped. I'm not a big birthday guy, but it was my birthday this weekend, so I was able to escape the birthday thing. Don't love my birthday, but I do got to give a shout out to some of my coworkers. They were really, really nice, and they actually all pitched in some money and got me a really nice bottle of whiskey.
Whoa.
Which is awesome. Yeah, so they bought me a bottle there? Long Row.
Oh, I know that one. Yeah. I've had a bottle of that
whiskey
before.
From Campbelltown.
Yep.
It's really good, so I've kind of cracked into it a little bit. But yeah, shout out to all the people at work for pitching in, getting me a nice card, and getting me this bottle of whiskey. I will be having a dram during the free pour segment of the episode in honor of the whiskey they got for me for my birthday. What about you, Pete? What's going on in your neck of the woods?
You're having a drink to honor the bottle of whiskey?
Yes. To honor the people that bought me the bottle of whiskey.
Oh,
yes.
The people. Okay.
Yeah.
I once brought a bottle of that back from Scotland one time when I was over visiting my sister. I always bring at least one bottle of scotch back, but that was one of the bottles I brought back. It was good stuff. Me, it's, you know, it's kind of the usual stuff. I have some time off from work coming up the week after next, which I'm very excited about. I saw a coyote on my run in Stanley Park the other day. Which also I get excited about. And no, it didn't try and chase me, and it wasn't aggressive or anything. I have pretty good luck with seeing coyotes in the park. I'm in there a lot, but that was cool. I love coyotes, and bald eagles have been flying around downtown too, so I've been getting some good looks of those. There have been a couple that have whipped right by my window, which is pretty awesome. So that's definitely been the highlights. Me and a couple buddies, we started a little music project about 2 weeks ago. And we just finished our first track, and we're very, very happy with it. And so we've started working on a second track. But it's pretty cool. There's three of us, and one of us will add an element, bounce it to the next person, and who'll bounce it around to the next person. And we each get two cracks at it. So I usually start it off because I do the drum beats and get those, sent it over. My buddy does the bass. And then my other buddy, Davin, adds on the melodies, and it comes back to me and then goes over to Matt and back to Davin. And the three of us put together these tiny little 2 or 3 minute down tempo tracks. It's we've kept it short deliberately, so we actually finish these, which is important.
That's really cool, man. I understand, you know, sometimes you don't want to share stuff like that, but hey, I'd love to hear it, man. If you ever want to share it, send it my way. I, you know, whether it's on SoundCloud or you put it in the Dropbox, it'd be really cool. But I understand if you don't as well. I get that whole thing.
No,
you know, if you're not ready that, but no, I'd love to hear it, Pete.
We're proud of it. It's a good track. Like, it's actually good. So I'll send it over when I send over the rest of the audio for the recording tonight, because you are on editing details, so you'll get a little bonus present in there. And maybe one day I can have some of your whiskey in a park outside. Hey, you can find us on Twitter. I am at Pete_Gass. The podcast is at Canuck Speak.
You can give me a follow on Twitter at Doug Then. And as always, Pete and I are building this ever-growing playlist on Spotify. It's the Canucks Outro Speakeasy playlist on Spotify. Shout out to Blair Breaks, who I saw shouted us out for the playlist as well, which is great. So thank you, Blair. I know you listen occasionally, so appreciate the shout out for the playlist.
It's the Canucks Speakeasy Outro Playlist, not the Canucks Outro Speakeasy Playlist.
Same.
I'm sure it'll come up in the Spotify searches. I can't see too many people using that as their playlist names. Let's get into Around the Room. There wasn't as much stuff going on.
I think you're going to want to hear this.
No, I'm just playing. I'm having fun here at the hockey game.
We got a few little topics, and before we do that, I just wanted to quickly mention what happened with the Penguins the other day as well. I just remembered about this. Is the Penguins announce they're allowing fans into the building, and then the same day they announced that Crosby's out with COVID protocol. I thought that was pretty funny. But the big thing I wanted to talk about this week was the Buffalo Sabres, and the Sabres have been kind of, well, I mean, how do you describe the Sabres? I mean, you talk about disappointment in Vancouver. It's the expansion cousins of the Canucks. It just, both teams are really underachieving this year. But it looks like there's a very good chance that Eichel may not be a Sabre next year. And who knows if it stops there. They've got this albatross of a bad deal right now with Skinner, who has one assist in 17 games, and his contract goes on forever. I don't know if you've caught many Sabres games, Doug, but what do you make of the mess over there?
Yeah, I mean, on paper, you got to think the Sabres have some really great talent, right? I mean, they got Jack Eichel, who a lot of people think is one of the best young centers in the game. They won the draft lottery a few years ago and got the pleasure of drafting Rasmus Dahlin first overall. I'm not saying Dahlin's a bust by any stretch, but, you know, I would say this point in his career and his development, I would say he's a bit of a disappointment. I think the Canucks fans are over the moon happy that we didn't win that draft lottery and we ended up with Quinn Hughes. Who knows long term? You know, maybe Dahlin can be a better player than Hughes long term. But at this point in their careers, I would rather have Quinn Hughes on my team than Rasmus Dahlin. I know there seems to be a bit of an issue between Ralph Kruger and Jack Eichel specifically. There was something about when Eichel was injured, and Kruger said to the media that he hurt himself in warm-up, and then Eichel came out and said he didn't hurt himself in warm-up. It was before warm-up. So there definitely seems to be some dissension between the coach and players. Overall, yeah, Buffalo's a mess, man. I mean, I know a lot of people think Vancouver's a bit of a mess at the moment, and it is in its own right, but I think Buffalo having all these high draft picks and all these highly touted players and just never being able to take that next step and even make the playoffs. I know last year the Canucks did make the playoffs, and it was under weird circumstances, you know, with the return to play and the play-in games. They brought, 20 teams, was it, or 24 teams back, I think it was. So, you know, there's a lot of people who don't think that if the season would have gone on the way it was trending last year, the Canucks would have even made the playoffs, but they did. But Buffalo, yeah, you look at the roster, and obviously Jeff Skinner contract is bad. I mean, if Canucks fans think the Louis Erickson contract's bad, my God, man, that Jeff Skinner contract goes on, like you said, forever, Pete. And it's what, a $9 million cap hit, I believe?
Yeah, through 26-27. The guy's got one assist in 17 games this year.
Yeah, and I would imagine the way that contract is signed, it's pretty buyout proof as well, right? Like, if you buy him out, I think it was you that tweeted something the last year of the deal, there's a cap hit for $11.2 million or something like that, or I believe I saw
someone... that was Erik Karlsson I was talking about. If you were to buy out Erik Karlsson's contract after this year, there are cap penalties that go through to 32-33, and I would assume Skinner's would be similar if you were to buy it out after this year.
Yeah, it's just brutal. And they've gone through GMs, they've gone through coaches, and for whatever reason, they just don't seem to be able to take that next step. And at the end of the day, you know, I always look back to ownership. And, you know, when you have poor ownership, it usually translates to your team that you're putting on the field, on the ice, or on the basketball court.
Yeah, so Skinner's as well, it would go through 32-33. It's not as bad as the Erik Karlsson one, but it would carry... For the 22-23 season, it would carry pretty much a $9 million hit anyways. And then in the last year of his deal, it would be a 6.4 hit. But all the other years are under a 2.5 hit, but it still goes to 32-33. So that's a lot of money to spend on a guy that you just signed. But, I mean, it's not even just him. I mean, Kyle Okposo hasn't been good for a long time, really. And, well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, he hasn't been what he was in his early years with the Islanders, but he's got one assist in 15 games. You mentioned Dahlin. He's a team worst minus 17. And right behind him is Taylor Hall, who's a minus 14. And Hall only has one goal as well. Well, so does Dahlin. But you have Eichel and Hall who've combined for 3 goals in 38 games. It's crazy. Like, Olofsson and Reinhardt have actually done all right. Like, those guys have been kind of carrying the offense a bit. And, I mean, Eichel does have 15 points in 18 games. So I do think a lot of the hate on him is a little bit unjust, but he only has 2 goals. But still, I mean, their blue line, on paper, I think their blue line looks pretty decent. You got the 2 Rasmuses. You got Colin Miller, who was pretty good over in the Vegas years. You have Jake McCabe, who I think is a very serviceable defenseman. Brandon Montour, who's put in good time with the Ducks as well. And then after that, you know, you have Henry Yokiharu, who is a guy who, when they traded with Chicago, a lot of people thought, like, wow, Buffalo made off really well in that deal. Yokiharu has 2 points in 16 games and is a minus 7. I mean, it just looks to me on paper that this team should be a lot better than what they are.
Yeah, I mean, when you list off that top 6 defensemen, I mean, I would say they're probably just as good as the Canucks top 6, and at least on paper, and yet they're really underperforming. I mean, right there, I also think you hit the nail on the head when you said Eichel and Hull have combined for 3 goals on the season. I know Eichel's still nearly a point a game, or just over a point a game, or just under a point a game, pardon me, but the fact that he still only has 2 goals on the year, that is a concern to me. Taylor Hall, he's a goal scorer, right? Like, generally speaking, like, I think of Taylor Hall more as a goal scorer. I know he's still putting up decent amount of points, but yeah, it's really disappointing, man. I don't know how you fix it in Buffalo. Like, do you blow it all up and start all over when you still have a young nucleus and guys like Eichel and Dahlin, or you know, do you figure out, like, it's tough, man. Like, I don't know. Obviously, unless Eichel forces his way out of Buffalo, I don't know how you fix that problem. I mean, I'm not trading Eichel. You're never going to get fair value for him.
If you're trading Eichel, you're going to get a haul back, but is that going to help you? I mean, it's always great to see draft picks and prospects, but, you know, Eichel is the sure thing. So, anyways, it's going to be interesting. I do think there's obviously something wrong with the coaching in the room there. I'm sure they say the same thing about Vancouver, but they're a team that I think this offseason is going to be really interesting to watch because their fans have certainly turned on them. And of course, being so close to Toronto as well, they get a lot of the Canadian media following what's going on over there, just like you do with the Bills. Another guy who's been struggling around the league, Zach Parise. He's going to be a healthy scratch for only the second time in his career tonight.
Yeah, first time since he signed that contract with the Minnesota Wild. I heard it. I was watching That's Hockey just before we hit record tonight. And apparently what it was is I think there was a tie game and he stayed on the ice. He was supposed to come off and he stayed on the ice for like a minute and a half. And they ended up scoring a goal against and losing the game because of it. So I think the coaching staff said, you know what, they need to make an example out of him. And every player is held to the same standard. And because of that, you know, they are saying that essentially he cost them that game. And now he needs to sit in the press box for a night.
And, you know, there's another guy as well who's got a bit of a ugly contract. He's 36 years old. He's carrying a cap hit of $7.5 million, and he still has four more years of that with a no-movement clause after this. Remember when him and Suter signed those identical monster deals, a 13-year contract for Parise? But, yeah, I mean, he's pretty much buyout-proof, so that's one for the Wild that is not going to age well. It's their second most expensive player, just behind Jared Spurgeon. And he's tied with exactly with what Ryan Suter makes. So it's kind of similar to the Louis Erickson thing. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The Wild have three guys making over $7.5 million. Zach Parise, Jared Spurgeon, and Ryan Suter.
Spurgeon's making over $7.5 million?
Yeah, he's 7.575.
Wow, that blows my mind. Like, I like Spurgeon, and I've always thought he's one of the more underrated defensemen in the league. But I don't think he's worth $7.5 million.
No, they got some interesting ones there. That Parise one is gonna be tough. I don't think Spurgeon is either. Lastly, I just wanted to touch on Vasilevsky over the Lightning. Three straight shutouts. You don't see that very often. A goalie going that long. I wanted to mention it because it is right now where it sits. Even though it's over 200 minutes, it is the 69th longest streak in NHL history. He should move up a couple spots, including it with Ryan Miller right now. Ryan Miller has got 19 seconds longer than him, which he did with the Canucks in 2014-15, so he'll move past Ryan Miller. But I also wanted to mention that Roberto Luongo did it twice in his time with the Canucks, the 14th longest in NHL history, 242 minutes and 36 seconds. That was back in the 2008-2009 season. And then he did it again in 2007-2008, just a little bit less time, 212-12, also with the Canucks. So I wanted to give Lou a couple shout-outs there because that's pretty awesome, but also just mention what Vasilevsky is doing. And like I said, he's 69th. If he gets a shutout in the next period, though, he jumps all the way up from 69th to 34th if he keeps the next period scoreless.
Who's got the all-time record? Is it Patrick Lalime?
No, in the modern era, it's Brian Boucher.
Brian Boucher, okay.
He did. I remember he got five straight shutouts when he was with the Coyotes. That was crazy back in 2003-04. That's the modern record. So, yeah, Brian Boucher.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I think Andrei Vasilevsky, heading into this year, everyone thought he was top candidate to win the Vezina Trophy and probably the best goalie in the league. And clearly he's showing it, and Tampa Bay's probably the best team in the league. I also got to say, shout out to Steven Stamkos because, you know, that injury he sustained last year, and then he played that one shift in the playoffs, and he scored a goal. I didn't expect Stamkos to come back and to be as good as he's been this year, especially since Kucherov's been out. But, you know, shout out to Stamkos. He's playing exceptionally well right now for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they look like the team to beat heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, Stammer, keep getting me points, man. I need that in the hockey pool. He was my third-round pick this year. Hey, let's take this into Chirpin now and get into all the good stuff, all the Canucks talk here. So Chirpin is where we raid the Canucks Twitterverse, which, as we know, is never devoid of content. We pick a few tweets out from there and we talk about them. So, Doug, are you ready? Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I've got mine already queued up, my first chirp of the episode, and it is from V. You can follow them at VEEDWG. Holtby experiment is over. Just ride the hell out of Demko. I don't get Green. He had no problem doing it last year with Markey.
Yeah, I think this was going around the airwaves a lot last night too on Sportsnet in the post game. But I think a lot of people were frustrated that we saw Holtby start that game, especially after how well Demko played, and a lot of people were saying bubble Demko and looking at Demko, of course, is the future and making us feel better about letting Markstrom go. And then Holtby comes in, has a subpar game. I think a lot of us just want to see, I mean, Demko could play all the games for the rest of the season, I think, for what a lot of Canucks fans care. And I mean, he had a bunch of days off. He could have gone back to back more than likely, but I understand Green wanting to have the goalies on back-to-back road games. They each get a start. That's kind of the MO for the NHL this year in teams, is that seems to be the formula. I mean, Winnipeg did it too, but you know, on Green's side, you know, he doesn't have a contract. He's playing for a job. He's playing for a win. And I guess he felt that that was the right move to go about not starting Demko that game. I don't know. I don't like it. I didn't like it. I really wanted to see Holtby in there, but I think, you know, he's going to get dangled for Seattle. Does he get taken by Seattle? I don't know. That's a $4.5 million cap hit for a goalie, but I do think that the load moving forward should not be evenly distributed.
Yeah, I agree. I think Demko should have got the start in the second game of the back-to-back. You know, why not? The kid's going to play back-to-backs at some point. He's been the better goalie as of late. You know, let's start playing Demko more.
All right, Doug, my first chirp from friend of the show. We're now calling him Luke the Tall King, but we know him as Luke the Bartender. You can follow him at LCFRST2. It says, don't like 650? Don't listen. It's simple. No need to keep bashing on it or the people working at the station. Everyone is entitled to an opinion, but it just seems weird to keep shitting on the only station in town because it doesn't follow the exact narrative you want.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Luke's saying. I mean, if you don't like it, don't listen. It's simple as that. I know, you know, the narrative, you know, oh, well, it's house radio. I mean, sure, you know, I guess they think it's house radio because they have the rights and the only rights to the game. So their directive and their narrative is going to be a little bit more positive than negative. But I would say, honestly, from the few times I have listened to 650 since the 1040 shutdown, I would say the majority of the personalities, the broadcasters on 650 have been negative and have said the Canucks need to be better and have pointed out some of the flaws and the issues that this team has. And yeah, it's that simple. Change the channel, tune it out.
And in case people haven't noticed, there are a sea of Canucks podcasts out there as well. They've got this little one on your dial, but there are more Canucks podcasts out there than I know what to shake a stick at. So if you don't like 650, go and listen to one of those. There's a ton of different opinions out there. I like 650. I've always liked it. I mean, they were nice enough to put me on the air a few weeks ago as well. So, I mean, I'm a little biased myself. And of course, yeah, they are the holding all the rights to the Canucks, but I think they do a good job with it. And I really enjoy the post games as well. But yeah, lots of Canucks content out there. We know 1040's gone. It sucks. But I did see Don Taylor tweet that he's got something coming up. And Rob Faye's doing an excellent job as well. Real good shout out to him, man. I love what he's doing. So these guys are going to come back in other ways too. And there's going to be even more voices. One of the great things about being a Canucks fan is we have a ton of voices from a ton of different people and lifestyles. It's pretty cool.
My second chirp of the episode is from West Coast Express. You can give them a follow at Left Coast, XPRESS, so Express, minus the E. And this is very similar to the first chirp I had, but you know what? I really want to lean into this. Demko hasn't played a single back-to-back this season. It's one thing to be afraid that he can't handle it, but at least base it on data. If he got lit up today, sure, avoid him for back-to-backs, but being afraid of the hypothetical burnout is some boogeyman stuff. Hashtag Canucks.
You just feel Canucks fans just itching to get a run of Thatcher Demko right now, can't you? It's this back-to-back. And hey, look, I'm going to go again off a little sidebar from Demko over to Travis Green for a sec. And I really like Travis Green, but I do find myself questioning more and more decisions this year. And I'm starting to think that after this year, it's not just a Benning thing, it's a Benning and Green thing, and kind of got to blow out everyone out of this organization and try some things different. And again, you know, it's the same thing that's happening with Olli Juolevi. Like, us as fans, we want to see these young guys in more. I feel like Mark Michaelis is getting close as well, or should be getting a look at some point. But the way we are right now, with Benning likely going at the end of the year, at least from most accounts, what people are saying, and Green on the hot seat, a lot of the stuff that they're doing, and you can say this in a lot of regards, is very old school, and it's not quite passing the reins over to the new guys, which brings us back to Demko. Demko is the future starter of this team, without a doubt. I mean, he has been fantastic. You get one full year next year with Holtby as the backup. I really hope next year, if it's an 82-game season, you're going to see Demko 50 to 55 starts at least. It's really frustrating right now, though, that he hasn't gotten into the back-to-backs. And so now we got Toronto and Montreal coming up, who can put up a ton of goals and have put up a ton of goals against the Canucks. It's going to be really interesting to see how they handle it. Do they go Demko all the time and say, oh, we don't want to hurt his confidence if he's getting lit up? Or do they split against both teams? I would really like to see Demko start three of the next four, though.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, the Canucks made a bold decision in the offseason to go with Demko as their goalie of the future. I know there was a lot of people who still thought that Jacob Markstrom, despite his contract demands, should have been the goalie we signed, but we didn't. And I will give Jim Benning credit for that decision. I think it was the right decision to let Markstrom walk and to, you know, put all your trust into Demko moving forward. But Green needs to start playing him more and needs to really start riding him. And, you know, I think Canucks fans have been calling, you know, Demko the number one goalie for almost a month now, and yet he's still splitting the games nearly 50-50 with Holtby. And I will say one last thing regarding Holtby. I was really, I liked the signing when I first saw it. And I know $4.5 million seemed like a lot of money, but looking at it now, it does seem like a lot of money for a backup goalie who isn't really giving you a lot. I know he's a great person. He does a lot for, you know, social issues, but his game just is a little bit off right now, and hopefully he can work through it. But right now, that contract looks to be, you know, one of the reasons why the Canucks weren't able to sign Tyler Toffoli, and I don't want to keep beating that dead horse.
One of the many reasons. I'm not going to put it all on him. I know we also thought that Ian Clark would work wonders with him, but this hasn't quite happened. One thing with Holtby as well that's just kind of frustrating is I find he plays on his knees a lot, and he's not very quick when he gets onto his knees, and that's something else that I don't like. Hey, we got a bit of a goalie theme, so for my last chirp, I want to ask you, first of all, do you remember what Canucks game was 7 years ago yesterday?
7 years ago yesterday?
I'll give you a hint. It was a home game, but it wasn't played at Rogers Arena.
A home game? Was it? Did they play a game at the Coliseum? No.
No, but they played a game at another venue in Vancouver, at BC Place.
Oh, yes, the Heritage Classic. Yeah. I should have known that.
So 7 years ago yesterday was the Heritage Classic. So my tweet is coming from, I don't want to say friend of the show, but I like to think he is. He's definitely a friend of me, because he once bought me tequila. So a friend of the show, Eddie Lack. Happy 7-year anniversary to this fun, in quotation marks, game. Still having nightmares from having 55,000 people wishing Bobby played. Honest question, though, was everyone booing or looing?
Eddie Lack's always, you know, a super funny guy. You know, he was always a great personality. He still engages with a lot of Canucks fans on Twitter. It was a weird decision by Tortorella. I think it was Tortorella being Tortorella and thinking he's always the smartest guy in the room. And essentially, you know, I think that game is what led to Luongo officially wanting out and saying he was done with the Canucks. So I don't put the blame on you, Eddie. I put the blame on Torts.
Yeah, 100%. That was the further beginning of the end for Luongo in Vancouver. Well, Doug, the Canucks, look, everything has been said. It's been a tough year, but I guess a good place to start is, what do you think is fundamentally wrong, and is it something that can be changed this year, or are we now just into, like, this season is a bit of a write-off? Like, we talked earlier in the show about how the odds of them finishing anything other than sixth right now are not very likely, but it's going to be hard to trade pieces with everything going on this year at the deadline. So right now, like, what is the position as a fan here? Like, what are we doing? What is going to happen with this team? How do we ride out these last 30 games or so?
How long are these episodes meant to be, Pete?
Yeah, well, is it that? I mean, that was like several questions loaded on top. So let's just kind of keep it simple. Like, Doug, what are the Canucks right now?
They're an average team. They're a middling team that, you know, are going to be fighting to barely make the playoffs at the end of the year. I think a lot of that, honestly, is the lack of production on the bottom six. I know, you know, the top two lines have been inconsistent at times this year, but good teams have that depth throughout their entire lineup. And so when your top players are struggling, which happens to every team in the league, and every player goes through hot and cold stretches, your bottom six players, or, you know, the bottom half of your lineup, can pick your team up and help you get those wins. And I just don't think they're getting enough consistent production out of that bottom six right now. Gaudette's played well, I think, but he's just been snake bitten. You got guys like Sutter, who I believe have what, one or two assists on the year. You know, that bottom line has been absolutely atrocious, you know, as far as point production goes, and even defensively, they haven't been that great. I think honestly, there's so much pressure on the, let's say, top seven forwards. If those top seven forwards aren't producing and they aren't scoring 2-3 goals a game, this team very rarely is going to be able to win games. And then also compile that with their inconsistent goaltending they've been getting. It's just, yeah, they're not as deep of a team at the moment as a lot of the other teams in this division are.
When you say top seven forwards, who's your seventh? Is that Gaudette?
I would put Gaudette there because he is generating offensive chances. I mean, if you look at the analytics side of his game right now, he is one of the, you know, best players at generating offensive, shots and zone entries and all that stuff. But he's just not, for whatever reason, putting the puck in the net. I think he's got one of the higher expected goals per game as well at the moment, but for whatever reason, the guy is just absolutely snake bitten. So I do put him in that top seven role, but just barely. And that also goes to the fact that, you know, that second unit power play for this team has, scored the one goal on the year, and that's an issue for them as well. And so that's why I kind of lump Gaudette in there.
Well, you said Gaudette takes a lot of shots. He certainly does. He's got a low shooting percentage. The win against the Jets, the 4-0 game, he had two helpers, and they were his first two assists on the year. I thought that gave him a lot more confidence last night in the loss to the Jets. He was a lot more noticeable. He was skating harder, so maybe that helped him out a little bit. But still, at the end of the day, 4 points in 22 games, that's going to hurt. Sutter, you mentioned as well, he is on a back-to-back point streak for assists. He had his first assist against the Jets in game one of that series and his second assist in game two. So, but still, I mean, there's not a lot that you're going to get out of Brandon Sutter. Although I do think they may have taken away his second assist. I'd have to double check that one. One other thing with the second unit power play, I've noticed is in the last couple games, they've actually divided the ice time a little bit more. So like, people were pretty hard. Oh, there's no second power play unit scoring, but the second power play unit would often get like 20 seconds. The Canucks would play these extended first units, which is something a lot of teams have done. I know Toronto and Edmonton have done that as well. When you have, can load up like that. And when the Canucks PP1 is flying it around like that, it is pretty fun to watch. But the second unit the last couple games has been getting a bit more time, which is good. I think it helps with the first unit as well. It gives them a little bit more rest because after playing 100 seconds and guy comes out of the box, it kind of throws that line out for a little bit. And the Canucks have quite often, after being on a power play, taken a penalty as well, which puts some of those guys out for even longer. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that you touched on there that are problems. The inconsistent goaltending has been a big one. The blue line has been getting better. I got to say this. We talked about Nate Schmidt. Nate Schmidt has certainly been much better in the last 10, 12 games or so than he was for the first 10, 12 games. He's definitely become our best all-around defender. I want to say Hughes, even though, like I said, that was who I gave it to, but Hughes is also a minus 15. So with 22 points, a lot of them on the power play. So that does make it tough from a defensive angle to choose Hughes, but I still did because I thought he looked great last night. Tyler Myers is a bit of a wild card back there. He has moments. And you know what's funny is one of my best friends is a Jets fan. And when we got Myers, asked him, what's the deal with Tyler Myers? And he'd say, you know what? Some games you're going to love him and some games you're going to drive him crazy. And how prophetic is that? That's so true. So like some things that Myers does, he does well. And he's our second highest scoring defenseman. He's got 12 points in 26 games, which would put him almost 40-point defenseman in a regular season. But you wouldn't think that with the amount of penalties he takes and the amount of kind of silliness he does out there. Hamonic has gotten better the last couple games. But for me, the big thing, it when you look at what the Canucks are spending collectively right now on Hoglander, Pettersson, and Hughes, who are all on entry-level deals, you've got Bo Horvat on a sweet deal at 5.5. You've got Besser under 6 as well, and you got Demko at like around $1 million. You've got those guys combining, what is it? Just off the top of my head, that's like, that's got to be less than $15 million for those six players. And we're so up against the cap, and we have such an inefficient bottom six. And for me, that is the big problem. The fact that they have all those guys, that six of your 20 starting guys, arguably your six best, for $15 million, and with the remaining cap space, you cannot get secondary scoring. And that, for me, goes to there's been a lot of decisions over the years that I've been like, yeah, you know, I don't know. I haven't liked a lot of the professional signings, but this is a year it's really hurt them. I personally hope that they are able to move some guys at the deadline, blow this up a little bit. But for me, I think it's time to really look at how the organization is structured. I've wanted a team president for a long time. And for me, that still remains one of the biggest offseason priorities for the Canucks, is getting that buffer between Francesco and the GM, whoever the GM will be.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've said this before, but, you know, there were rumors about a year ago, maybe it was a year and a half ago, that Francesco had put some calls out to guys like Dean Lombardi and, you know, wanted to talk about potentially him coming in a presidential role, and he wouldn't even accept the call. So it is interesting, you know, whether the reason that is because Lombardi liked his role he currently had and he currently has in Philly, or, you know, some of the rumors you hear about Francesco being, you know, a meddling owner scares him off. I agree with you, though. I do think that there needs the structure at the top of this team, as far as management goes, needs to be better set. Right now, it seems like you've only got two real voices in the room, and that's Jim Benning and John Weisbrod. And I think you need more people at the table with more ideas, more thoughts. It just right now, yeah, it just seems like they're very narrow-minded. And the other thing that we've seen time and after time with this management group is they don't have the foresight to see how things are going to happen. Yeah, I hearken back to the Dan Hamhuis trade deadline fiasco, where apparently Benning hadn't gone to Hamhuis until like a day or two before the deadline about the potential of him waiving his no-trade clause. And there was actually a report I saw where someone, and I couldn't verify it, I think it might have been the fourth period, and I know a lot of people roll their eyes, but I saw a report that Alex Edler would consider waiving his no-trade clause if he was going to a contender. Well, if that is the case, Jim, talk to Edler, see what a list of teams he would go to, and then start calling those teams. You know what I mean? I love Edler. He's played the most games, more games than any other defenseman in Canucks history, has more points than any other defenseman in Canucks history. But if you can get a decent asset back for him, I don't know, maybe you can get a late round first or, you know, an early second, who knows. Absolutely explore that option if there is some sort of asset you can get back. This team at the moment, they don't look like they're having fun. I've said this before as well, and I know you have too, Pete. They don't look like they're having fun playing at the moment. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's the travel schedule, the amount of games they're having to play in such a short period of time. They don't look like they're having fun going to the game every day or going to the rink every day. And right now, there's a lot of issues with this team, and I think the majority of them are the dead money at the bottom of the lineup. But, you know, there are some other issues throughout the course of the lineup. JT Miller and his body language and his lack of back-checking and, you know, him coughing up the puck over and over again and then barely making an effort to skate back and try to retrieve the puck back. It just, that seems to be an issue at the moment. Obviously, there were rumors this past weekend about Jake Virtanen and, you know, a potential trade with the Anaheim Ducks that fell through because of the money situation. And next year, Jake's scheduled to make $3.2 million. And I believe the Ducks wanted the Canucks to retain part of that salary, and the Canucks said no, which I'm glad they said no, But at this point, you know, I think a guy like Jake Virtanen, he needs to go. He really does. I mean, hopefully it's better for him. I think it'd be better for the culture in the dressing room as well. Jake Virtanen, to me, has always struck me as a guy that is very immature for his age and has never taken his career seriously as an NHL player. And I think the Canucks, you know, need to move on from him.
Oh, yeah. Virtanen's a guy who I think everyone, probably even Jake as well, is aware that it's time to go. But, you know, you mentioned Edler. The thing with Edler that's going to be tough is he's still got a $6 million cap hit. No contending team really has $6 million left lying around that they can put at him, which means that any sort of deal, and the Canucks can do this, they can take some salary back to make it close. Maybe there's like a UFA of $4 million on that team that they can take to help take some salary back. But the Canucks will have to take salary back along with the asset to make that work. The other guys you look at, Tanner Pearson, Jordy Benn, Brandon Sutter, those guys can all be moved. If Travis Hamonic was to agree as well, you could try and move him. So there are things there. Virtanen, I mean, I don't know if it gets done now. It could get done in the offseason. It's going to be a tricky one with him as well. I'm very curious to see, though, if the Canucks are able to make any moves. I mean, I'm already thinking seller at this moment. I mean, I just don't see any way the Canucks can make the playoffs. I'd love for them to go on a row, but I mean, we're almost halfway through the year right now. The most important thing I think for the Canucks would be to just kind of assess what they got, try and reacquire some young assets. You're going to have maybe a little bit of cap space, but not really next year. And that's kind of the thing is with Petey and Hughes, that's going to make things tough next year too. So it is time to kind of look big picture. The year after next, a lot of stuff comes off the books. And that is, again, that's when the Canucks need to be really ready to target. So acquire more assets now if you can, because it may not get any easier next year either. And I think, again, we this starts with the top down. I think we need to see some changes there.
Yeah, I agree. The Demko contract, depending on how he plays for the rest of the year, could cost them quite a more than they're expecting as well. So that's another concern I have heading into this offseason. But yeah, it's been a baffling year for the Canucks, especially after the success they had in the bubble last year. And I know they lost some key pieces, and you know, we keep talking about Tanev, who everybody wanted to trade and everybody wanted the Canucks not to re-sign. We talk about Markstrom, same thing. Nobody, you know, a lot of people didn't want to re-sign him and thought this was the right move, myself included. The Toffoli thing, obviously, you know, what it cost us to acquire him and then to let him walk away for nothing, that hurts. And, you know, Troy Stetcher, heart and soul guy, local kid, bottom pairing defenseman. I know a lot of people are still up in arms about that, but I don't think, at least my personal opinion, I don't think losing those four players should have impacted this team as much as it has this year, and they should be playing as poorly as they are. Just my opinion.
But also, like, you know, they brought in pieces as well. It's not like it was a complete subtraction. A guy like Nate Schmidt comes in into Chris Tanev's role, which is a big hole. And so, you know, there's that. Another thing with Virtanen is RFA after next year, but his qualifying offer is $3 million. And you're talking about a guy right now with one goal in 21 games. So I do think there's a lot of pressure on the organization to move him out quickly, because otherwise he's going to be UFA and then he's going to walk, and it's going to be similar to what the Canucks did with the guys like Ben Hutton and Troy Stetcher. And I'm not saying they were the wrong moves, but there's no way after this the Canucks could sign Virtanen to a 1 year $3 million deal.
Yeah, I agree. I think Virtanen's days are numbered in a Canucks uniform. Obviously they were trying to trade him this past weekend, or for the past week or so, it sounds like the Canucks and Ducks were in negotiations, but they couldn't make the dollars and cents work, unfortunately. It will be interesting to see, because the Canucks were trying to get a roster player back in Danton Heinen. You know, I wonder if they're just willing to, you know, trade him for a draft pick at this point. Even that, though, is there a team that's willing to give up a draft pick and absorb the full $3.2 million cap hit? Well, actually, I don't think his cap is 3.2 next year, but the real dollars that you're going to have to pay Virtanen next year, because it's a backloaded contract, I believe is $3.2 million. So I believe this year it was like 1.6, and next year it's 3.2 with an average cap hit of 2.55, I believe. Those numbers might be off a little bit. I know you're the numbers guy, Pete.
Yeah, you're close. It's a 3.4, but it depends on when he gets paid out his bonus. It could be a 3.
Okay. But yeah, so that's the other thing is, you know, what team right now, every team I think is worried about real dollars and cash. Every team not having fans in the stadiums is, you know, worrying about their bottom line. And so I don't see too many teams wanting to add that extra payroll to their team next year for a player that's, you know, at best a, you know, maybe bottom six player. You know, I know he's still got the toolkit and the potential, but right now I'm not seeing Vertanen ever developing into the player that I think a lot of people thought he would be. But it'll be interesting. I do hope the Canucks realize early that, you know, they're not a playoff team this year, and then they start looking at options to sell off some assets to try to get some younger assets or draft picks back.
Well, and that's it. I mean, the fact is that the core of this team is going to be intact, and there's a lot of pieces around it that can get moved or should get moved, at least. I don't know if can, but there's definitely a lot of pieces that I would like to see the Canucks move out and just, again, reacquire those assets, reacquire some things so that after the 21-22 season, you're in a better spot to do whatever it is you need to do. And you have a ton of stuff coming off the books that year. Of course, like I mentioned, Petey and Hughes are going to be eating up space. But a guy like Antoine Roussel, who right now hasn't been bringing a lot, we got another year of Antoine Roussel. I don't know if anyone would go for him. Maybe some team would see value for a playoff run or something. I don't know. Another thing that I'm really interested in, though, and again, is it's going to have to wait until the off season because of salaries and money moving. But the Canucks do have one weapon this off season that they can use and they have to use. This isn't can, it's a half. And they talk about that right side D. This is how you address it. Is the Canucks really only need to protect on the blue line for the Seattle draft Olli Juolevi and Nate Schmidt. After that, whatever, you can expose the other guys. It doesn't matter. Quinn Hughes is exempt. Whatever, it's okay. But there are a ton of teams out there, a ton of teams that have issues with protecting D-men. And, you know, there's guys out there that, like we've talked about Dante Fabro and Jake Bean and, you know, Henry Yokiharu, who we mentioned either. And Tampa's got a couple guys as well, like Cernak and Foote. And Philly's got Philip Myers. Like, there's a lot of right-handed guys out there. Even Sammy Niku, who saw last night for the Jets. The Canucks are in a position where they can take on a defenseman next offseason, and that is something for me that they really have to weaponize and think about as well. They're going to lose someone in Seattle. I mean, right now, I believe it's going to be a forward, and I believe that forward will be Cole Lind or Zach MacEwen. So I think that's more likely than losing Braden Holtby or Tyler Myers, who will both be left exposed. But that's another thing that this offseason they need to think about is how can they use Seattle to their advantage. If we lose a guy like MacEwen, but we bring in a defenseman like Fabro, hey, you know what? That's fine. I love Zach MacEwen, but that's just going to be the cost of doing business and losing a guy to Seattle. So that's another thing I'm keeping an eye on with regards to the offseason. It does suck that, like, we're not even halfway through the year, but we're already thinking more and more about the offseason. But that is the reality, and that is something that the Canucks need to come out and say it. They haven't actually said it. They haven't acted like it. The fact that Green is still coaching with no contract extension, that makes it tough for him to really want to put in these young guys. The fact that Benning is still in charge, I mean, we don't really know what the direction is right now. So as fans, we want to know. I think a lot of those big changes are we're going to wait until the offseason, because I don't think ownership wants to pay two coaches or two GMs.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope the Canucks management, you know, whether that's going to be Benning or, you know, if a new regime comes in, has the foresight to do exactly what you just said and to weaponize that, you know, ability to take on a defenseman that one of those teams could lose for nothing. So, you know, maybe they get a draft pick or you trade a player back and at least they're getting something, and then they don't have to worry about leaving another player exposed. Whether or not the Canucks are going to be able to do that, I mean, you know, fingers crossed. I don't think young guys like Jake Bean are going to be left unprotected. I think that'll be a guy who's making more money in Carolina that they're going to be looking to get rid of, maybe like a Brett Pesce or, you know, Dougie Hamilton, who, again, I can't see them leaving Dougie Hamilton exposed, but I know there were some rumors that, you know, Dougie's contract's coming up and he's expecting to get paid, and whether or not Carolina, that, you know, has been fairly cheap of the last couple of years, is willing to sign Dougie to the contract he's expecting. Who knows? But yeah, Carolina is definitely a team that looks like they could have some issues with defensemen they need to protect. Obviously, you mentioned the Nashville Predators. Dante Fabro, I believe he's a local kid. I'm pretty sure he's at least from BC. I like Fabro, but does he not play the left side?
No, he's a righty.
He is a righty. Okay. I mean, he's an interesting option as well. Don't get me wrong, but you know, does he really move the needle for this team? I don't know. He's not been a consistent player for the Predators so far this year, which, you know, and they're not a great team. So you would think they'd want those young guys getting those minutes. It's going to be interesting though. I think the Canucks need to be aggressive at the trade deadline. And I think, like you said, they should be planning ahead for the expansion draft and seeing how they can use that to their advantage. I mean, the other thing that might come up, and I don't know how you'd feel about this, Pete, but, you know, would you be willing, if you're the Canucks, to give up a first round pick to the Seattle Kraken if they took the Tyler Myers contract off your hands?
No.
No. Okay.
No. I don't want to be keep handing out first round picks. That goes to hurt the organization. We've seen this as Canucks fans. I mean, as much crap as everyone and myself included has given to Jim Benning about a lot of these bad contracts, it is hard for me not to say that under Benning has been the best era of Canucks drafting ever. And before people go out and throw books at me, go back and show me another 7-year period where the Canucks consistently were able to find players. It never seemed to happen. We've had a lot of bad drafting, and this era and bringing in these guys that we've drafted in continuous years has been probably our best. I don't think Benning will be the guy for the next draft, but the Myers contract, I can live with it for now. It's not going to age well, I know that, but I don't want to give up another first. We didn't have a first or a second last year. So no, I want to keep all the chips and assets we can together for when the time is right and go from there. I mean, there's a very outside chance Seattle was to take Myers, but I doubt it. But you know, Fabro in Nashville right now, if Nashville decides they want to keep Fabro, that means they're going to expose or trade Ryan Ellis or Matthias Ekholm. I can't see them trading Ekholm. So maybe then Ryan Ellis is exposed. Carolina, yeah, I know they're trying to sign Dougie Hamilton. If they do, that leaves a whole flurry, because Hayden Fleury is one of the guys, of defensemen there that they need to expose, including of course Fleury, Bean, Pesci, Gardner, Shea, and Slavin. Like, they've got a lot there. So I it's something that I'd be curious to see what the Canucks do. But yeah, I don't want to give up any more draft picks right now. I want to keep draft picks.
I agree. I mean, look, the only way I would even consider that is if the Canucks can add a first round pick this year and trade one of those first round picks next year. You know, if you have two first round picks heading into this offseason, maybe you parlay one of them. You know, we saw what the Toronto Maple Leafs did when they gave up a first round pick to dump Patrick Marleau's contract. And then I forget who they traded. Maybe it was Sammy Kapanen. They were able to trade for a first round pick to get that back. You don't see that kind of thought process with this regime. And that's what's bothered me.
No.
And especially you know, you hit the nail on the head, Pete, with, you know, give credit to Jim Benning where you have to. And I do think that, you know, the Jim Benning era as Canucks general manager will go down as one of the best drafting years in Canucks history. You know, from the time he came into this team up until today, he has been one of the more consistent drafting GMs in Canucks history. Has he had some misses? Absolutely. You know, would every Canucks fan be over the moon if we would have selected Pasternak over Jared McCann? Of course. Was the Jake Virtanen draft a bust? Absolutely. Should we have taken Tkachuk over Ulevi? Probably, yes. But every GM makes mistakes. I know everyone loves Steve Yzerman and thinks Steve Yzerman's one of the greatest GMs of all time. If you look at Steve Yzerman's track record in the first round, he's had some big swings and some big misses. Now, Yzerman's been very good in the late rounds, but generally speaking, those late round picks, you rely more on your scouting department. It's the first round that your GM has more say and it has that definitive decision on who you take in that first round.
Yeah, for sure. And you're right. I did remember once I looked at Yzerman's track record and I was like, no GM is going to hit it all the time. I'm just speaking from a Canucks fan's perspective, where we've just gone years. And like, I remember in the late 80s and early 90s, I mean, we got Linden second overall in 88. And then, of course, we got Bure in 90. And that was a good era around then as well. But after that, except for the Sedins and, you know, grabbing Kessler, there hasn't been a lot of years where we're consistently put up picks. So I give the organization credit for that. But right now, I mean, the fact that this team is so cap heavy with a lot of useless weight is what's killing them. And I mean, the writing's on the wall. The media is calling for it. The fans are calling for it. It's going to be change. It's just a question of how far into the off season. I don't think it'll be before the off season myself. And then we'll see what happens from there. But in the meantime, we got a 5-game homestand coming up, 2 against the Habs, 2 against the Leafs, and 1 against the Oil. So, I mean, by that point, that's going to take us over the halfway mark of the season, and we're going to have a lot more answers by that point.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting set of games coming up here for the Canucks.
Doug, you ready to take this into the free pour?
Let's do it. It's that time of the episode for the free pour open floor. And before I get into my topic, I am going to pour myself a dram of whiskey. As I said earlier, shout out to the people at work for getting me this bottle. I really, really, really appreciate it. Long Row. It's a Campbelltown whiskey. It's peated as well. It's a really good whiskey. I've been loving it. So yeah, shout out to all you guys. I really appreciated it. I know some of you listen to the podcast, some of you don't, but hey, cheers to you.
Cheers. And Doug, happy birthday. You only turned 16 once.
Hey, and you know what? Trevor Linden, man. So hey, you gotta live it up, right? So the topic I wanted to talk about in this week's episode is a TV show that Grace and I started watching, and I probably mentioned it once before, but I'm going to mention it again because we just finished watching it yesterday. We finally watched the last 2 episodes, and I cannot recommend this show enough. It's The Americans. It's got Kerry Russell in it and Matthew Rhys, and it's essentially about this couple who are KGB agents living in the U.S. in the 80s, and they have a family. They have 2 children that are born in the U.S., and it's a spy thriller set in the 80s, and it's an outstanding series. I absolutely love the finale. I thought they nailed it. I thought it was really, really well done. I'm sure I've talked about this before, but I have to talk about it again just because of how good it is, and now that I've finished the series, I can give it my complete and total thumbs up.
Well, you have mentioned it before. I don't remember if it was on here, but I do remember you talking about it. So maybe if I watch more TV shows, maybe I'll give that one a go. Hockey's being taken up a lot of my TV watching, I gotta say. For me, I just wanted to talk a little bit of music stuff because I've seen a few tweets about this today. But 35 years ago today, Metallica released Master of Puppets. And I know, Doug, we've talked in the past about influential albums, and this is one I've often kind of dabbled with as being in my top 10. I don't know if it would make my final list, but it would certainly be considered, just because I have very vivid memories. So I didn't get into this album right when it came out, because I was only 7. So that must have been closer to 9 or 10 when I got into this album and got into Metallica more. But I remember there was a kid down the road who gave me a tape. On one side was Master of Puppets and the other side was Appetite for Destruction. I still remember this. So it must have been after 87, but not long after. And that tape, at first I didn't really get it. And then I just listened to it more and more and more. And it's an album that I have on vinyl. I think Sanitarium in particular is just an outrageous track, as is Orion. Which also then I rediscovered later when DJ Shadow sampled Orion on Introducing as well. But solid 8 tracks, great album. So I just wanted to mention Master Puppets. I do like Metallica. I've seen them live a handful of times. They always put on a great show back when we could go to live music. But that album, it would push for influential albums for me, because it really turned me onto that genre, and of course Appetite as well. But more staying power for me with Master of Puppets.
Nice. Yeah, a couple of my favorite tracks from that album, Battery and Damage Inc.
Yeah, great tracks. The beginning and the end there. Nice stuff. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Episode 66, the Gino Ojek Mario Lemieux episode, is just about in the books. Doug, do you have a favorite Super Mario memory?
I do. It's probably the one that kind of comes to mind most with Mario highlights, but the reason it's my favorite memory is because I remember being at my aunt's place and she was having a party, or we're going over there for dinner. It was the weekend or whatever, and it was the goal Mario Lemieux scored against John Casey in the Stanley Cup Finals, where he kind of just drove Casey into the net there on the breakaway. That's one of my all-time favorite Mario Lemieux highlights. The other one is just Mario Lemieux coming back when he had retired for a couple of years, and then he came back and he was the MVP, and I believe he won the Art Ross Trophy the first year he came back. Just blew me away that he'd been away from the game. I think he was out of the game for 2 or 3 years. And then he came back and he picked up right where he left off, and he was, you know, the best player that year.
Yeah, those were my two as well. That's how I always think of Mario. Fantastic stuff. One of my all-time favorite players to watch. And if he was healthy, he's the guy who could have broken some of Gretzky's in single season points records and goals records. He was something else. It was pretty cool that we got to watch 99 and 66 right around the same time. That was, and also Stevie Y and a whole bunch of other guys. It was a great era for hockey right around that time in the 90s. And that Pittsburgh team, and yeah, the scoring on John Casey in the other final against the Blackhawks. I remember those well. You can find us online. This beat is going to be added on to the Canuck Speakeasy outro playlist. That is on Spotify. Give that a listen if you want to just hear some funky jams and while you're kicking around the house or trying to do work or going for a walk to get away from your work and your dining room table like some of us do. I'm on Twitter at Pete_Gas.
Give me a follow on Twitter at Doug Venn. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Canuck Speak. As always, thanks for listening.
Hasta luego.